Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Another wonderful evening of dulcet tones brought to you by LA Talk Radio, a very private studio somewhere hidden deep within the Sawtooth Mountains. And of course, Robert Gibbs and Bobby Jean Bell, looking at my co-host and original partner in crime, Bobby Jean Bell. Hello, Bobby.
We've read a lot of books, haven't we?
Oh, now there's a topper. Great way to start a show. We have read a lot of books. Yeah, we have. But, hey, it be what it be. Richard cannot be with us tonight, but he's with us in spirit, I am sure. And, you know, this his little box over here shall remain empty, but we miss him. We always miss him when he's not around. And what's going on in Albuquerque there, Bobby Jean? I heard some nasty stuff about Albuquerque. You guys were going to get like a lot of rain or something?
Is there rain coming? Well, we've had fire. We've had just tragic fires. That's me, right, Jim, of California. And I are not strangers to
fires.
The terrifying prospect of fire. And it could be, I haven't checked into news today at all. It could be that maybe we have some rain. It's a little late, but we'll take it. It's the West.
Well, it's
desert.
Raining here.
We will take rain.
It's been raining here all day, and it's going to rain for the next day or two. Yeah. So
it has a feeling out there like there's something coming, but you know, I get in my own little tunnel, my own little zone. And, I don't really know what's going on out there.
Well, I can tell you, but I don't want to. Well, let's get into our first thing. You know, we have a thing on the Writer's Block now. It's called the Writer's Corner. And our guests can ask us questions as a writer or a reader or whichever. Bobby Jean, of course, you're a writer. You have a lot of questions. For the first 10 or so minutes, we indulge our fantasy of being actually fairly intelligent. So, with that being said, well, let's welcome our guest for this evening. Kat Rambo has joined us. She is a editor, a proofreader, a writer in her own right. She does it all. Welcome to the show, Kat.
Thank you so much. It is delightful to be here.
Well, it's delightful to have you. Truly.
We don't have anybody that we know for sure is like calling in or anything.
I mean,
the phones could ring and you might have somebody.
I'm not going to set that up anymore. If somebody wants to call, we are here. Anyway.
So do we just start asking? Start asking questions?
I'll tell you what,
I have a question for Kat.
Absolutely. Okay.
Because I had a lot of fun spending some time away. And if I have this right, from Norwescon. Is that how to pronounce it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And that was just like 10 days ago you were there.
Yes, it's in Seattle. And I flew back and was the author guest of honor. And it was just, it was amazing. They were so kind and wonderful. And they kept me so busy.
Yeah, you had a full schedule.
I really did.
Well, I thought it would be fun to have you share a little bit. I know we've had other authors that go to Comic-Con. I know there's a lot of things that have con in their names.
Our Dragon Con authors, which are the science fiction people.
Yeah. So I thought maybe you could tell us a little bit about why would an author want to go? Why would a reader or a fan give us some tips on how you prepare to take advantage of such a situation?
Oh, absolutely. So as a writer, it is a great chance to meet with readers.
Right.
I love signings. I did a reading. I talked to a ton of people, and I got a chance to natter and gossip with some of my fellow writers as well. So there was some good networking. for readers, it is a great chance to go and meet some of the writers that you enjoy and get them to sign a book, get a chance to talk to them, get a chance to hear them talk on a panel. And it's also just great fun to be among a whole bunch of fellow geeks, some of which are wearing costumes and some of which are not, but just everybody is in high spirits and enjoying themselves. And that's the fun of it.
Were a lot of people dressed, I know some of these events, like steampunk things and things, you just see like outrageous, you know, wild fun. So how, so if you were a reader and you were going, how would you need to dress? How would you prepare yourself to fit in, I guess, or not fit in?
So you can fit in two ways. And one might be to dress up in a costume, which I saw people there. I saw the three fairy godmothers from Cinderella, who I have seen every year at NorwestCon. And I was just like, oh, they're still here. How amazing. but you can also go just as a person. Often people like to wear funny T-shirts. That seems to be a common language there. But as a writer, I try and dress up a little bit to show that I'm treating it as a professional thing, that I'm showing, honoring the people that have come to see. But great deal of it was a very fabulous pink and purple coat during the pandemic. And it was my vow to myself that I would someday get to go to cons again. And so I got to finally unveil my fabulous, fabulous coat.
Fun. Jim, do you have any questions on this subject?
I have comments. NorwestCon is something, it's a little bit bigger than the Cowboy Festival.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure.
And we do the same thing at the Cowboy Festival every year in Santa Clarita, in that, you know, we have our tables and our booth, which is a Buckaroo bookstore.
Nice.
And all the Western writers are there, and you can buy books. You can talk to the writers, sit and pick their brains, or, you know, get books signed, or mess with writers if you choose, like we did with Johnny Boggs one year. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. I've never been to a big con, you know, not Seattle or New York Dragon Con, San Diego Comic Con, any of those, the bigger ones. But I cut my teeth on the Cowboy Festival.
Nice. Well, when I think about it, a lot of people come to Cowboy Festival dressed up, don't they?
Yes. Well, absolutely. Most people do that are wandering around.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
And I know some of our authors, like Dale Jackson, has talked about meeting people in film, because it was Los Angeles based. That it is wonderful to meet readers and sell books, but also that just all kinds of people come and he had the opportunity to meet, people potentially looking for screenwriters and other kinds of things like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The first year I was there at the Cowboy Fest, I spent out on the front porch.
First year.
Yeah. And then you moved me inside. And I spent 2 days being harassed by Bill Smith. William Smith was an old actor. Yeah, he sat across from him.
He had his book of poetry.
He did. And he kept throwing stuff at me. and the Sunday morning, Court and I were sitting there. We were both early. We had gone over and gotten coffee and rolls over at the Chuck Wagon. We'd come over and we parked ourselves at a table. And this guy walked in with a baseball cap on. And he looked at me and he goes, oh, he said, cowboy books. He says, I need some cowboy books. So he bought every one I had as far as each title. And then he bought, I don't remember, Court didn't have his shotgun series.
No, he didn't have that yet.
It was just the one he did on the writing. And he paid for everything and he left. And Court says, God, he just got everything you had. I said, you know who that was? And he goes, he probably should. And I said, that was Keith Carradine.
Oh, it was Keith Carradine. Oh, yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't always recognize, you know, people. No, I mean, they don't look like they do on film.
the voice gave him away. And what a nice man, not just a nice guy.
Yeah, it was a wonderful time. It was a wonderful time. There was, when I looked at the seminars that you, or panels, or the presentations that you were involved in, Kat, this one really spoke to me. Reading like a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just tell us a little bit about what you covered in that session?
Well, we talked about how as a writer's, at least for me, I usually really enjoy it or really hate it. I will go back and try and figure out the why, how of that. And I think one of the things that we talked about in the panel is sometimes if there's something where you feel you're weak, like say dialogue, and you're just like, I'm not good with dialogue, then maybe reading a lot of writers who are very good with dialogue and saying, okay, so how are they doing that? How are they doing that? Is a really useful thing. And then I think also as a writer, we kind of want to know what is the new and best stuff that's coming out in the field. It's good to be informed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm actually just convinced that seat of the pants is still the best way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I absolutely. It seems like, what is it? The dragon thing where you can dictate. And when you're dictating and it's typing for you, you're not getting the whole, it's the feeling isn't coming out in your writing.
Well, see, I like dragon dictate, and I will go back and forth between dragon and typing, but I have to like super be in the flow. And that's because dragon can keep up with me when I'm kind of like going sometimes faster than I can type. But it is irritating because it certainly inserts a...
It does. Yes. Which is actually something I want to talk with you about tonight, which is editing.
Yeah.
So, it's not like there's a lot of those programs that work. And if you want to use them, if you're writing a term paper, great.
Okay.
If you're writing, it's a question of do you or do you not? I prefer I do not. That's personal preference of mine.
I have one more question because I know we're going to be done with this segment in a second.
Going to break, yeah.
So what is flash fiction?
Flash fiction is super short stories, usually anywhere from 100 words to 1,000 words.
Uh-huh.
Just very small, condensed bites of fiction.
And, okay. And is the idea that you're going to also write it really fast, or is it that you're going to take that, 3,000 words and get it down to 100 or 1,000?
Well, it's certainly nicer to write flash fiction and sit down for half an hour and have something done as opposed to working a novel and you only have 65,000 more to go or whatever.
I know, huh? Yeah. That's horrible. I look at the page count and I go, crap.
Is that like what a reader does when you kind of go like, how many pages is this book? And I'm only on page 129 and there's 340. Is that kind of like that?
Well, when you're writing, you can stretch out words. I mean, you can stretch out page count, but you can't stretch out word count. So, if you haven't got it, you haven't got it, and God bless you.
But Charles Dickens wrote by the word, and that's one of the reasons why he's such a wordy guy.
Exactly.
Is that how he was paid? Is that kind of how it was at that time?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. Well, we're going to, head to group by Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing, and we'll be right back with you after another brief word from Tuscany Bay Books.
Hey everybody, Richard Polinelli from Tuscany Bay Books here. And if you're an author and you've just finished your manuscript, you just got the easy part done. There is editing, formatting, cover creation, marketing, the list goes on and on. But don't panic. because we're here and we can do all of that for you so that you can focus on the most important thing, writing your next book. And if you're a reader looking for your next great read, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. We have books for the kids. We have mysteries. We have thrillers. We have westerns. And we have some of the best science fiction being written by award-winning science fiction authors who will tell you an entertaining story, not send you to your therapist with message fiction. So again, readers and writers, come to Tuscany Bay on your next great adventure.
It is now 6:15 in the evening. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we are on the air with our guest tonight, Kat Rambo. Oh, incidentally, your latest movie is coming up on Netflix next week.
Is it?
Rambo 5, yeah. That's the one where Sylvester has more facelifts and he has years on his belt.
I can't believe it. I said they're really doing 5. That's
yeah. Well, no, it's done. I mean, it's been out for a couple of years, but oi. Anyway, Kat, welcome to the Writer's Block. You've just finished. Well, not just finished, but you were one of the two editors that worked on an anthology called the. Let me see if I can remember here. The Things at Heart. It's a compilation of stories, kind of science fiction, kind of like personal, kind of like all different types of things. But as an editor and having done, I don't know how many were in that anthology we did for Planetary Series, I think 11 books, you know, each book was like 500 some odd pages long, and each book had like 35 authors and it's a lot. I know what you have to go through as an editor, especially in anthologies, because no two writers write the same. They have to be acceptable.
Yeah.
So give me an idea. And I kind of went through the way you edited, and I really like the way you edit. I don't know what the initial manuscript was like, but I know I was looking at some of your editing. Well, I don't know if I actually caught it or not, but the way the book was done, it was really good.
Oh, thank you so much.
It takes a lot for an editor to work that hard, especially in an anthology. And I know that editing a book, we edit books all the time. I mean, I'm right in the middle of two right now. I edit books all day long. It's my job. But I try not to do anthologies anymore because they make you crazy.
Yes.
And writers make you crazy.
Yes.
And I prefer not to talk to them if I don't have to outside of my office. So, but they still find your number and they still call you late at night and you go, what do you mean? this passage isn't any good. Well, it's like we talked the other night, you know, if it's crap, it's crap.
Yes.
Absolutely. You can't fix crap. Just take it out. But your editing style, I think you does in that you don't go after content. You go after substance. You go after punctuation and making sure that things flow.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is captioned correctly and done correctly. That's a good thing because I'm big on dialogue. As you know, we discussed this. Let our listeners know about your editing style. What is it that you like to do as an editor?
Well, with that book, it's actually really interesting because it's the product of two editors working together. And so I did a set of edits, and then Jen did a set of edits, and then we met, and I think it took us 3 hours worth of Zoom call, but we went through page by page, and Jen will do things. One of the things she did that I thought was really neat, we'd never seen us do, to read a passage. So we'd have a sentence, we'd be arguing about what it would look like, and she'd be like, okay, well, let's listen to it. And so she'd do it one way, and we'd hear the computer read it, and then she'd do it the other way, and we'd hear the computer read it. And that was really useful, I thought. And so I think as far as kind of heavy, well, just sort of not heavy as in we did a whole bunch of editing, but in terms of putting time into editing, this is one that both of us put a great deal of time and care into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you can tell. And a lot of writers don't understand that editing is not always fixing your manuscript. Editing is a lot of time-consuming reading.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so
and,
much.
And you can get really caught up in the reading part of it.
Yeah.
And well, especially if you're in a story that really doesn't require a lot of editing. From 20 to the end of your
manuscript. Oh.
God. I didn't even fix a comma here. You know?
Well, we had something like that happen where I had asked Justina Robeson, whose stories I really like, I said, will you do me a story? And she's like, sure, what's the upper limit? And I said, oh, 5,000. And she's, okay. And she contacted me a few weeks in and she's like, yeah, this one's going kind of long. And I was like, really? How long? And she's like, well, it's at like 8,000 or 9,000 now. And I was like, well, my goodness, that's a good bit longer than I was thinking. I was like, keep going. And certainly I'll read it. Right. But just be aware, if it's super long, it has to be super good. And she turned it in. And I believe it was, I want to say 14,000 words. I mean, it was just, and I were just like, no, I'm going to take, but we'll read it. We'll read it. And then we read it. And it was so good that we had to include it. And it's easily one of the best stories in there. I think it's like Across the Stars. I can't remember the exact title. It's a beautiful one, but yeah.
So yeah, 14,000 words. That's a novella.
Who was the author on that one again?
It's Justina Rose.
Yeah, it's the last one in the book. Our Savage Heart Calls to Itself Across the Endless Tides. Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, people who write anthologies and stories for anthologies don't realize that they're in a book with a whole bunch of other writers.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're only allotted so many words. And a lot of, I mean, we had authors. We were at one author, it was like at 37,000 plus words. That's like a book.
And there's a variety of lengths of stories. Yeah. I mean, there isn't really another one nearly as long as that one. No. And as a reader, I like anthologies because you don't have a big time commitment. You can, you know, read that story before you go to bed, or you have that, you know, you're having lunch and you've got 30 minutes and there's nobody you want to eat with. So, you know.
Or nobody who wants to eat with you.
So there you go. I thought it was interesting that you, and so I thought I would ask this question. How did you two determine to group the stories under hearts, hands, and minds?
We did that because I asked Jane Yolen to contribute a piece, and she said, can I do a poem? And I was like, sure, you're Jane Yolen. I will let you do whatever you want. And she sent it in 3 poems. And I said to Jen, we've got 3 Jane Yolen poems. Let's use them. And Jen was the person who came up with the idea of organizing the book into thirds around the poems.
Okay. Yeah. Now I see that. But still, it was interesting to me. There were times when I thought, now what is this section that this is, you know, we're reading a PDF. It's like, oh, what is this? I had to print out the table of contents so I could remember where I was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
PDFs are a little hard to deal with sometimes.
Yeah, for sure.
I just download them into my Kindle on my desktop and then they come up as a book. So, you know.
So you edited together, or did you take some of the stories that came in? Jen took some of them and you edited them separately, and then you got together and went through them. Is that?
We edited separately.
Okay, you edited separately.
And are there stories when you were done?
I'm sorry.
I
looked at both set of stories. We all looked at.
Okay.
My pronouns are all confused now.
Yeah.
Both looked at every story.
Okay.
Were there stories that were submitted that you did not include?
Oh, yeah. We had, I think, I want to say 240 stories submitted. And we got just as many, I think even more, for the one that we just did called The Reinvented Detective. So there was a lot of wrangling. In fact, the one that we're doing, we're meeting on Monday, and I think we're going to have to fight to the death because we've only got room for one more story, and we both have one we like. So we're going to have to figure that out.
They have two-headed horns for that, you know.
Yeah.
You just make sure you can control the coin.
Okay, I'll just say that I'll try to put it this way. So because of this show, I've read a fair amount of sci-fi and fantasy and paranormal and all since we started this 7 years ago. It was not a genre that I necessarily gravitated to. You know, I'd read some Ray Bradbury and, you know, but it was not a genre that I would, that I really had gravitated to. And so there's still some things that I, as a reader, there were a few stories where I really was kind of clueless about what's going on.
Yeah.
So when you're, but you're, of course, I would imagine that most readers are going to pick this up that are familiar with the genre and terminology, yeah. And, you know, it's second nature to them. When you're deciding on stories, do you think about that? Will this story, you know, most people read this that just have a passion for this genre. Well, does that make sense?
I think that's a great question. It's actually not one I had thought about. Is kind of like, are we thinking about our readers as well-versed in sort of the tropes of science fiction as opposed to somebody who doesn't know them? And I would hope that we found at least a few stories that anyone can read. I mean, that would entice. I would hope that you only found a few.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, there was one that in the foreword or the afterword, I can't recall, but you were so, it had really moved one of you. And it was the one where we have a very dysfunctional family and you even, yeah. And I know I made a note on it. And no pain, but
yeah.
And you even have a little warning. And so I knew this was going to be a very powerful story. And I have to say, I was very engaged, but I was clueless about really what was happening.
Yeah. Well, it's the story of kind of, it's the abusive parent and then the two siblings.
And the siblings. And I'm not sure, that's not a criticism at all. Yeah. It's just... I was like, wait a minute. And I would have to go back and read the paragraph before or reread dialogue. You know, we have a guy that's sort of the main emperor. We have like a power authority figure and, you know, and that's when I thought, I'm so sorry, but I don't get this one.
Hard, I think. Is that it's in some ways it's like an impressionistic painting, right? It's kind of this sense of this big, vast, stellar empire in Babylon, but it's a tiny little story, right?
Yeah.
So you can only get little bits of it. So
and it comes down to these central characters.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was something about what time. Wait a minute. Is this? Are we talking? Like, is she already dead? She, you know, like with the mom. I was like, Wait a minute. Oh, she's here again. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that I found that story so moving is I think that for anybody that grew up in an abusive family and had siblings, you're very aware of kind of these sort of complex, they're your I think that the story does a really nice job of conveying that sort of conflicted I love you, I hate you,
definitely
back and forth.
Yeah. I found all the stories really entertaining and some were, you know, I really liked Perfect Mate, and I've never done any of the dating kind of things, but I thought, oh, that must be exactly what goes on. And it was just an easy, you know, I got this. And then the way that it ended was so charming.
Oh, that's just super delightful. That's actually a friend of mine, Xander.
Yeah, that was really fun. Yes, I think there are all of these stories that we can even if they're set in otherworldly, you know, this is the human, this is the human part and the human can.
It is. And with that, don't go away. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. We'll be right back with you after a brief word from LA Talk Radio.
So you want to be a radio talk show host, huh? Well, why don't you get off your butt and do just that? You see, at LA Talk Radio, we've got slots available all day long, Saturdays and Sundays included. They're 50-minute increments, so all you have to do is go to latalkradio.com, go to click on the link that says Become a Host, follow the easy-to-follow instructions, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be more than delighted to walk you through everything you need to do to get your own radio show started, up and running worldwide with a podcast to follow. That's very easy to do. LATalkRadio.com. Let them help you get your dream alive. LA Talk Radio, you've got something to say. Now let's hear it.
And we are back. It is now 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. And we are in the studio with Kat Rembo and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and myself, and Mr. Richard Polinelli could not be with us tonight, but we miss him. He's here in spirit. I truly believe that. I do. Let's talk a little bit about dialogue, Kat, because that's two of us love dialogue.
Yes.
What is your secret to writing dialogue?
My secret to writing dialogue. Oh, my gosh. Leave out all the boring stuff.
I like it.
What's yours?
My secret is to make it sound as natural as you possibly can make it sound.
Yeah.
Because people speak in staccato. They don't speak in rhythm. They don't speak in anything, especially when they're in a conversation. People interrupt. People run over the top of you. Dialogue is like, you're actually sitting around the campfire or in the living room or in the bathroom or wherever you are with another person actually having a conversation. That's what it should sound like.
I like that.
And I've told Jerry, who does a wonderful job of editing my books, don't mess with my dialogue. Don't correct my dialogue.
Yeah.
Because there are certain ways of pronouncing words when you're speaking that have no concept of the written word at all. Yeah. Nobody says, I'm going to the store.
That's true.
They say, I'm going to the store. Going to the store. So if you can figure out a way to write it.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, I think one of my secrets is that I don't try to put a dialect into the dialogue. I listen to the way people speak. And I listen to the way certain peoples, like from English and British and Irish and Scottish, how they speak and the cadence in which they speak. And I try to include that in the dialogue. So when you're reading it, it comes to you. You don't have to to think it's Scottish. You know it's Scottish.
I see people sometimes, they try to convey the accents through spelling. And then it's confusing, I think.
Right. And unless you're from County Cork, Ireland, that you're speaking with such a heavy Irish brogue, you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a fine, fine day. Fine, fine day.
Yeah.
But if you put a fucking in front of it, then it's a fucking fine day. And now you know he's from Ireland, don't you? but that is my secret to dialogue. But I also go back and I also read it out loud. I always read it out loud.
Always.
Oh my God. If you don't, you're dead.
Yeah. No, 100% believe that.
Yeah. Bobby, you've read enough of my stuff and enough other dialogue. Richard writes good dialogue. Mm-hmm. What is your preference when you're reading dialogue? Do you want it to give you the accent, or you don't want to be able to feel it in the dialogue itself?
That's a really good question. I feel like any dialogue I've read in any book somehow transports me to where I need to be and to those characters. You know, we've also read like Claire Fullerton and not a lot of, but Southern Southern fiction, really,
right.
really compelling Southern fiction. And I don't know that the characters help me maybe remember, but I don't know that we're reading. Somehow we just know that if we were there, there'd be a whatever their accent would be. You know, if you're in New England and the story's in Maine, if you've ever been, you know, I guess I just let my magic. I trust the writer. You know, if you got me, you got me in by the second page, and I will go with you wherever you're going, and I will give you my imagination and trust that you will provide with for me the what I need. So I don't. Sure. It's a really good question.
Now, Kat, I'm a firm believer in matching the dialogue with the character.
Okay,
that's important.
And it is essential. To me, at any rate, and I don't know your feelings. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. But it is essential to me to make sure that if you have an English guy and he's in Belfouche, South Dakota, and he's a town marshal, he's not saying y'all.
That makes sense to me.
So, and that's, we just did a book for a brand new writer. It turned out to be a pretty good tome. His name is oh my gosh, James. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, his book is Tom's Revenge. Uh-huh. And we had a long conversation on the phone and emails about this very thing. And I said, you need to go back and watch what you're doing with your dialogue, especially match it to your characters.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Don't just throw it in there because you think it sounds good.
No.
Nine times out of ten, it doesn't.
It could come out of that character's mouth, right?
Exactly.
You hear a line and you're like, oh, it's that character.
Exactly. And, you know, I found out, and after 15 books, you think I'd learn. Well, you think I would, but not necessarily always. That, I mean, I'm not struggling now, but I mean, I'm writing three characters that are on a trip together. And one of them is a notorious horse thief. The other one's a town marshal. And the third one's a Texas Ranger.
Okay.
And they're all together. Well, the horse thief is listening to these two guys talk. And he goes, well, I was under the understanding that we were leaving. But if you tell her going to stand there and palaver, I'm going to the saloon. You know, stuff like that. And he goes, No. We're gonna go ahead and leave, you know. I love giving a character a voice.
Yeah,
because I don't believe in really describing the characters. I want them to describe themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or describe each other.
Right. And if your imagination should be the one making the character look like what the character looks like to you.
Yeah. And I think as far as description goes, you want more of the details that sort of tell you things about how that character presents themselves to the world. So rather than sort of the color of the pants, you know, are those pants all crumpled and worn or are
they
ironed?
Exactly. And that kind of gives you a clue who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
I mean, if he's got ironed pants and clean boots, he's a fop.
That's it.
You know, if he's a Texas Ranger, he's filthy, dirty, and he's going to steal another horse because his horse, you know, burn out. But go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, I just read a sort of a side, I guess, as we're talking about dialogue and all. And I just read a fabulous book called The Rose Code. It's by the author's last name is Quinn. I want to say it's Anna. And I didn't read it. I'm part of a book group, and the only way I can fit another book in is Audible. And so I was listening to it every morning as I was getting ready. And it's an unbelievable book. It takes place during World War II with the Bletchley, at the Bletchley Park. And there are three. It's fabulous. I could not think about them actually all day long. I couldn't wait to get back to hear what was going to happen next. And because it was Audible, I haven't listened to a lot of books through Audible. There's one narrator. I mean, there's one voice. And so she's doing the three main women, you know, from what she does with her voice, which one this is talking, and then she'll tell you, and this mad because she's reading, you know, she's reading the book, she's not acting the book out. And so when we were just talking about accents, these three, you know, everybody's British in this book. And there are men and women, and they're older people, and there are quirky characters. And it was so interesting that she was so able. And I wonder now on the written word, if I looked at the written page, how would these voices, you know, or is it just because she knows I'm going to give Mab this kind of voice and Beth has to have this kind of voice, and Oslo, who has some royalty sort of, she's going to have, you know, because their voices are also identifying what part of society were coming from. And so we haven't talked a lot on this show about narration and the spoke, you know, books going to Audible or different, you know, formats. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine writers, if you think that's going to happen, you have to be thinking about that for somebody that's going to be reading aloud.
Right. Well,
and I think one of the things, at least that I learned, is as a science fiction writer, sometimes one gets carried away with names, and then they come and they're like, hey, the narrator wants to know how to bring this and this and this. And you're like, oh,
thank you. We have read a few other words.
Oh my God. You know, it's all been
the other, the names of the places, the rivers, the people. It's like, I would have to make a list.
My pet peeve is science fiction writers getting together and trying to top one another about who could come up with the weirdest names.
It's like reading Tolstoy for the first time and having to get those names and the nicknames and the.
And you have to ask the writer, how do you pronounce this? Yeah. And he goes, I don't know.
Yeah, because.
I don't know.
But what an imagination for the authors that have the imagination to create that otherly world and everything about it.
I know. I love Richard to death, and that man can create a world that seems so real.
Yeah.
So I mean,
and anyway, your characters do. These characters do too. Your authors in this anthology do that too.
Let's get our last break out of the way.
Yeah.
You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you after a brief word from, Kat Rambeau and my publicist, Creative Edge Publicity, and Mickey Mickelson.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
And we are back. Bobby Jean, you want to ask the question?
Do you get writer's block? If yes, what do you do about it? And if no, how come you don't get it?
Well, I try not to get it because I like being, but what I do, if I'm blocked on something, switch to another project or else go for a long walk or take a shower.
Oh,
oh wow. Now that's
take
a good one.
Shower. That's a good one.
I never heard that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we've heard everything from forget about it for 2 weeks to bring in another guy with a gun.
Yeah.
So we've heard about the name of characters.
It's a wonderful question. And it's so interesting how you all handle it.
Let's roll over to our reader segment as a writer and Bobby Jean, you as a reader. What is it that you're looking for when you're writing your books, Kat? Are you looking for to appease your readership? Are you looking to tell your own story? What are you looking for as far as giving the readers something that they will enjoy?
Well, I can tell you with the space opera, I just look to have fun and write the kind of book that I enjoy reading, which is full of banter and found family and intelligent spaceships and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. I think right now the world is kind of crappy and we need some good capitalism here and there.
Yeah, we need some chuckles.
What?
We need some chuckles.
Yeah, yeah. That's what
not chuckles, not chuckles the clown, chuckles.
Yeah.
Bobby, what is it you're looking for? As a reader, I know that you've answered this question before, but you always come up with different things. So.
Well, as a reader, I want to be entertained. If I'm reading, and I do enjoy nonfiction too, if I'm reading nonfiction, I want to learn all I can, access it with my, you know, my brain if I'm reading on a topic I don't know a lot about. But even fiction like this book, The Rose Code, exposed me to all kinds of things about World War II I really didn't know, and just really interesting situations. I just started listening to another for this same book group, The Elephant Company. It's fascinating, nonfiction, absolutely fascinating. And again, World War II, but it's about a gentleman and elephants in Burma. I'm learning about the teak trade and about elephants. So I think it's if I'm going to give up my time, if I'm going to invest some money, I want it to stay with me. I want it to entertain and educate me. I want to be somehow I want to be better for having having given time and energy to it. And I really do, like I said earlier, I trust the author. I just trust that you're going to take me on a ride. And that doesn't mean it can have hard stuff. I like to be, I want the story.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally don't ever want to have to sit back and think, well, that was a week that I'll never get back.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
when I'm writing my stories, I try to give the reader the best story I can give them. Yeah. And in testament to that particular comment, my ex-wife actually picked up a copy of Jefferson's Chance. That's my very latest book. I'm actually run before I'm one I'm working on right now. And she gave me a review and she said, I have never read a Western, much less one of his books, his books, him. She goes, but I absolutely love this book. The story was phenomenal. The description's great. She says, I actually cried at a few places in the book. And she says, I will read all of his stuff now.
Nice.
And she has actually since then, she buys them too. She doesn't have me send them. And she's read like five or six now.
Nice.
So, I mean, if I can get through to a reader that, we divorced in 1980, then I think I've accomplished that job, or at least with one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think if one person walks away from your book saying, God, what a great read.
Yeah.
What a good story.
Mm-hmm. And then they want to read more.
I think that in every writer.
We don't want to just done with, I want, if I've been taken, if I've really been taken by a book, I wish I had the time to be. Many of the authors that we've interviewed, I, on your website, I see all kinds of titles. And I know that I can't challenge to get to them. I mean, I have a list of books, that from over 7 years, because almost every author we've had has had more than one book. And
right.
I've been so entranced. That's like, I want to go back into their, their world or their way that they, the things that you get excited about and write about. I want to read those too.
Right. Right. And word of the wise, if you write a War and Peace, don't send it to us. We won't read it.
Anything over 360 is challenge in a week.
We got to say goodnight, but don't go away because we usually have a little chat after the show. If you want to hang out, that's great. Thank you for joining us. It was nice having you. And I want to say that Kat and I actually have been in the same part of the country at the same time.
Oh, my gosh.
At Seattle, her in Seattle, West Seattle, and me in Tacoma, and north end of Tacoma and Gig Harbor. Oh, my God, just great places, aren't they? Just love great places. You can't find you can't find any better than the Seattle Tacoma area. It's just wonderful. I saw Neil Diamond at the Tacoma Dome.
Oh, my gosh.
Hoorah! What a great show. Okay, that's it for us for tonight. Next week, we have joining us on the writer's block, Marilyn Kreitz, also a Mickey writer. She will be joining us. We just got her book today, so I haven't even opened it yet. There you go. And, of course, our grand husband, Mr. James Bell.
He's cooking.
He's always cooking. He's a cooker. And Mr. Sam Hassan, owner and engineer of LA Talk Radio, and myself, and of course, the bookie without whom the show would not be possible. We are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.